World Tomorrow, as recorded before a live audience in a nationwide speaking campaign, Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
People in general, whether they listen to the program or whether they're aware of the crime statistics or the economic reports or whatnot, are really aware that something is wrong with the country. Back in the early 70s, I was predicting in many of the campaigns before tens of thousands of people that we would have in the middle 1970s a terrible, great drought. Now, if I'd only been specific, if I'd only stuck my neck out and hazarded a few guesses, which I didn't, I just said drought in general. And drought means drought. But I didn't go on like I could have to tell them the Mississippi River was going to be about half dried up with the barges and boats up on the mud flats all stranded out of the water. I could have gone on to tell them some terrible things about the state of California, where about 42% of the vegetables are grown for the entirety of the United States, and how that would be under great drought, and where even permanent crops like walnut orchards would be cut down for firewood. I could have told them about the big trees dying in England and the fact that the drought there would break 100-year records, as it has been doing in Europe as well. But I didn't know all of that. I just knew there was going to be a drought. And I didn't base the fact of my knowledge of a drought in the mid-70s on a biblical prophecy. I merely based it upon the fact of the scientific analysis of sunspots, of the cyclical nature of droughts that come every 20 years or so, of the terrible dust bowl of the 30s, of the big serious drought in the mid-50s, and I knew we were due for another one. Now, because I know we are not under God's protection, but that He has taken His protection away from the United States because of our national way of life, I simply know that if the scientists say that we're due in nature, and because of simply the patterns in the entirety of the solar system, it just seems to be there is a cycle of dry weather, I knew God wasn't going to prevent it. I don't say God did it to us, I say God did not prevent it. You know, biblical prophecy is not going to happen just because God says so. I hope you know how I mean that. A lot of people equate biblical prophecy with God in His heavenly armchair with a whole armload of thunderbolts waiting for just the right moment. And when He gets angry enough about what's going on down here below, then He interferes with some terrible drought or famine or warfare or disease epidemic or turning the waters to blood or everybody gets a boil or hailstones of 100 pounds weight come down. Actually, much of biblical prophecy, and I can prove that even in the seven last plagues, one of them has to do with the drying up of the figurative river Euphrates to prepare the way for human armies from the Oriental area to come into the Middle Eastern area to begin the Battle of Armageddon, and therefore is not so much a plague, although the people seeing them approaching might think so, as it is merely God intervening in human affairs to allow humanity to attack another portion of humanity. God allows us to bring on ourselves the natural consequences of our own way of life. Now, in the United States, we are changing roles. Families are upside down. Dad is no longer in charge. They either share the tasks at home, and Mom, of course, takes over on Tuesday, and Dad on Wednesday, and Mom again on Thursday. But in most cases, there isn't any dad and mom to work out some pair-bound or sharing relationship between the kids and the dishes, because in so many American homes, there is no father, and in many, there is no mother. What is it, 40% or so of the labor force that is now female? And what percent of those do you suppose are divorced or separated? Well, it must be very high. I have hazarded a guess that perhaps up to 70 or 80% of all the waitresses in the restaurants and the motels and all that, the people who are doing various servant-type work in the United States, are divorced females. Every other baby born in big cities such as Chicago and New York are illegitimate. The children in the United States are forming various youth gangs, especially among the ethnic groups. And it's directly fulfilling a prophecy in the third chapter of Isaiah in verse 12, which says, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them." Now, it isn't impossible that the United States could eventually have a female for a vice president and eventually a female for a president. For me to say that that might not be the best that that might not be God's will is going to get all kinds of groups very uptight, very excited. I'll get a whole ton of hate mail because of the women's lib movement and of the women's movement into politics. Now the ladies have got their own banks. They believe that it is somehow discriminatory for the bank to just say maybe the Bank of America. Now it's got to say the Women's Bank of America. So a lot of women, there are separate, I think, three separate banking organizations that have already started. So women can go bank in a bank just for women. I wonder how many of you have heard that new little country western song about that little bit of difference between a man and a woman. There's a song out about a little bit of difference between a man and a woman, something that apparently man is unable to change except for some people, and of course that makes you wonder about all that. I mean, I just don't even want to go into that, but this doctor running around with a tennis racket and people arguing about the hair on its legs. Anyway, but there are people, apparently by the thousands, who have gone through what they call transsexual operations, and I heard recently there was some kind of a survey that showed that out of the people who had undergone such an operation, there had been a very disproportionate number of suicides, because the people just hadn't found what they wanted. Well, obviously they didn't find what they wanted, it was gone, but nevertheless, they were suicides because they couldn't live with what they had done to themselves. Unbelievable. Can you imagine, there must be nothing more frustrating than to be so dissatisfied with what you are, I mean even your sex, that you want to change it. Now anciently, there was a city that was named after a practice of human beings, and it was called Sodom. And it was a neighboring city called Gomorrah. No one's ever traced down to find out why they called that city that, but at any rate, there were two hideously filthy cities with human beings practicing bestial, animalistic-type practices among themselves. Abraham had a relative over there. He began to argue with God about whether or not God was going to destroy it because he was really fearful that God might kill Lot and all of his people in there too. You can find that back in the 18th chapter of the book of Genesis, where Abraham was wondering whether or not Lot and his family had a chance. Well, God began to tell him, yes, even if I can find so many there, I will save the city for a few's sake. Just a few, a handful, if they're righteous. Abraham was worried because he thought, since he knew the city was so filthy and so rotten, and God had said he was going to destroy it, the angels had already gone, apparently, or at least were on their way very shortly. You read in verse 23, Abraham drew near and said, will you also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Peradventure there be 50 righteous. Now, he was thinking of a small number. I don't know whether that city was 500,000, whether it was 1.5 million or 5 million. But let's say it was only 50,000. He wanted to know whether a tiny minority, if they were righteous, would spare the city. God said, yes, he would spare it, if I can find 50. Verse 27, he said, now I've taken upon me to speak, and I'm nothing, I'm dust and ashes, but what if there are only, say, 45? And God said, well, I won't destroy it if there are only 45 righteous. Well, he said, now please don't get mad at me, verse 30, but what if there are only 30? He thought he better take a bigger cut at it this time. And he said, well, what about 20? And then finally he said, let me just speak once more, but what about 10? And the Eternal said he wouldn't even destroy it for 10's sake. But he did destroy it. So there weren't even 10. No, as a matter of fact, there weren't even 5. There was only 1. Not even Lot's wife was righteous. And when you think about what did happen back there, you wonder about the values of Lot. He is called in the Bible in the New Testament, Righteous Lot. And yet his values were so perverted that at the time these human beings, they appear to be human beings, but they were angels who were beating at the door, trying to get in. Lot came to the door. Here came the men of the city, and they were trying to drag these men back out into the street to commit a hideous act of perversion. And so here Lot is so callous to the real values of family life, the real values of his own children and his own family and what they should mean to him and to his wife, that he actually offered these perverts out there in the street his virginal daughters, whom he said had never known man, in order to avoid insulting a guest. Now, how's that for some kind of upside-down set of values? Here, don't attack those men whom I never saw before. They're guests. Take my daughters. I mean, it does kind of boggle your mind a little bit, doesn't it? They say that every sixth man in our society has homosexual tendencies and is either a practicing homosexual or has been at one time or another in his life. Every tenth American at one time or another in his life is going to need mental psychiatric care. Why? You have to ask the big why as to what is wrong with this country of ours. Now we hear of people screaming and crying, wanting the politicians to make everything right. Everybody expects the politicians to play God, and they demand of politicians that they act like God. They want more. They don't have enough. They want a guaranteed minimum wage. They want guaranteed national health insurance programs. They want anti-poverty programs, food stamp programs, Medicaid and Medicare. They want all kinds of things that are absolutely a juxtaposition, at loggerheads with each other, that are impossible to give, and they demand it, which, of course, tends to tempt politicians into lying a little bit now and then. Because if the people want the impossible, the politicians are quick to promise them the impossible. What do we want? We want to be number one in the world. We don't like the idea of the expanding colonial empire, the Soviet Union. We don't like the fact that they have achieved strategic superiority, or that they have achieved conventional superiority, that their navy is bigger, newer, faster than ours. We don't like the idea that their populaces are now about 90% protected by a brand new portable radar system which can jam our multiple independently reentry vehicles, or targetable reentry vehicles in the MIRV system, as it's called, which has now outdated our stationary strategic answer, our retaliatory capability, the Minuteman system, and to a large extent has outdated the Poseidon Polaris system aboard the submarine. We don't like that. We don't like the fact that Arabs over in Saudi Arabia and Iran are getting the F-14 fighters before our own Navy, Army, and or Air Force, rather, and Marine Corps. But Americans want to be number one. They want to remain number one, or get back to number one, and they want to stay there. Now, what else do they want? Well, they want a balanced budget, and they want more of that money that is going for defense to go into all of these programs to care for everybody that has needs. So they want more welfare programs and guaranteed minimum wages and a shorter work week and guaranteed national health insurance. And that means they want a smaller defense budget. So somebody who wants to get into the White House is going to promise you that we will remain strong, we will remain number one, but we'll cut the defense budget. Now, Americans don't like big government. So it's very popular to say, let's give the government back to the people. But they're not going to do that. Not in a million years. The American people believe in a great, huge myth. Oh, they believe in a lot of myths. But one of them is that government can solve our problems. That's a myth. They believe that government can solve inflation. That is a myth. They believe government can solve crime. That is a myth. They believe government can do for us what government has never been intended to do. Well, we're still going to go on believing the myths until, of course, the bottom falls out. In the first chapter of the book of Isaiah, God calls the whole government, the whole nation, Sodom, and draws the analogy of a body which is sick from head to foot. He calls us a sinful nation, in verse 4, laden with iniquity, children that are corruptors. And he says, why should I punish you anymore? Verse 5, why should you be stricken anymore? You just revolt more and more. Like a rebellious child that a parent is punishing, and they just don't really learn. It seems that the punishing doesn't do any good. The whole head, he said, is sick, and the whole heart faint. From the sole of the foot, even unto the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been clothed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. So he says the country is going to be desolate. Notice in verse 9, except the eternal of hosts had left unto us a very small remnant, more proportionately, accordingly, than we read in the 18th chapter of Genesis, because it was only one out of whatever size city that was. We should have been like as Sodom and like unto Gomorrah. Hear the word of the eternal, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear unto the law of our God, you people of Gomorrah. Now, why would God call all of us good people by such nasty names? I think one of the favorite little pieces of election year rhetoric is all this stuff about, I believe in the greatness of the American people. I believe in the goodness of the American people. I believe in the common sense of the American people. That's funny. I don't. Now, I do believe in a government of checks and balances. I do believe in a democratic system. I do believe that given all of the human governments on the face of the earth, ours, for all of its faults, is the best. The only one I want to live under. But I don't agree with the bumper sticker that says, America, love it or leave it. I agree with the one that says, America, change it or lose it. I don't agree that we cannot change, beginning at the grassroots, our own individual lives. And I don't agree that government is the person that ought to make us change by force. I don't agree that government is supposed to force people to change when people are supposed to change themselves. There is a root beginning cause for all that is wrong. I guess you could be overly simplistic in this and say that there is only one basic cause. That isn't really true. There are many. For every evil effect, there is a cause. But what really is right at the root cause of all that is wrong in this nation, and for that matter, around the world today? I've said for so many years on a broadcast, so long as human nature remains the same, or put another way, until human nature is changed, we will have wars. Because man is basically vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed. Because man is basically selfish for himself, and he is not a giving creature by nature. That is not natural for man. It is unnatural. What do you suppose the very highest, the very most perfect creation that Almighty God could produce really is? What is the absolute top, the best that God could do? The perfect creation, so far as He is able to do. I mean, the absolute epitome of anything that even the great Creator was capable of doing. I'll ask another question as a part of that. Do you feel you are an inferior being? Now, He says He's made us a little lower temporarily than the angels. But looking at it from another point of view, even though Lucifer and angels were supposed to be flawless and perfect, they were spirit beings, and that's where they will remain at that point. We're only a little lower than those spirit beings, and God is so infinitely above them, there is no comparison. He is also their creator, the creator of angel and spirit life. But I say that Adam and the process by which all of us got here, meaning a human being with a human mind, is the best of God's creation. It is the best God could create. I know that because I know He is reproducing Himself. And He has begotten after His own kind, and there's nobody any better. And Jesus Christ was born into the human family and came born of a virgin, walking the earth as a human being. So I know that God couldn't have done any better than to create a human being. A human being is the best that God could create. Even better than angels, because the capability, the eventual potential, is greater. Because angels cannot be begotten and then born of God, but we can be. Now, when I fly that fan jet Falcon, I'm flying a series of moving systems that are all very closely interrelated to each other. Whether you're talking about the electronics and avionics, or you're talking about the two separate hydraulic systems and the anti-skid device that can sense whether or not a wheel is skidding and prevent it by releasing it temporarily, whether you're talking about those power-boosted turbo systems that handle the controls of the engine, all of those magnificent technical pieces of equipment that man has been able to produce, to invent, to design, to engineer, to perfection, to put together, and to make it fly. Now, anytime I'm sitting in that Falcon, I can kill myself, whether I'm close to the ground or up at altitude. I'm in a cockpit virtually surrounded by all kinds of handles and knobs and gauges and dials. Like one girl, I think one time we had some students aboard, and one little old kid came up there and said, "My, look at all these clocks." Or I guess it was someone's little child, I forget. But we had taken passengers back and forth once in a while when we had room. And people look at the panel and they think all those round things are clocks. Well, you know, if I'm sitting up at altitude, 37,000 feet, moving along at about 500 miles an hour, I imagine all I'd have to do is just hit full flaps all of a sudden. And I could rip the wings off. And down I would go, and we would all die. I suppose if I were at 39,000 feet, I could just walk back and open the door. And I would be sucked out, blasted out, and everybody else would be too. The airplane would break in two, and we'd all die. I don't have to get up out of my seat. I can just be sitting in my seat, and all I got to do is just stick the emergency gear handle down. I mean, in this case, pull it out. Stick the gear right through the door, tuck the airplane under, go into an inverted spin, and die. It's right there. All I got to do is pull it. I got two handles up there in front of me that say the emergency fuel cutoff valves. All I got to be is a capricious idiot who doesn't have any more responsibility than to push or pull something that's near him, like a lot of little kids are around furnaces or what have you. And all I got to do is reach up and cut off the fuel flow to the engines, and if I can't get them started again, we all die. Or I could pick up a ball peen hammer and just start smashing all those dials and so on, and we all die. I mean, there's so many things I could do to kill myself. Now, I don't, because in the first place, that would cost a lot of money. In the second place, I'm too big of a coward. I don't want to die. I want to live a while. And I enjoy flying that Falcon. It's kind of like my father told me when I was about 12 or 13, the lesson about an automobile. When he told me that an automobile can either be a very, very wonderful machine for transportation, for convenience, and conserve man, get you from point A to point B and take you there safely, or it can be a deadly weapon in the hands of a very irresponsible person. It can be put to a very wrong use, as I imagine a fair segment of the population which has been born resulting from that use could tell you. I understand there's a new song out that Buck sings about born in the back seat of a rusty Oldsmobile. Isn't there something like that? But anyway, it's very true. The same thing is true about that airplane. It can be a very wonderful tool, piece of equipment and machinery, very technically integrated because of all of the engineering components, the many, many moving parts, and the fabulous capability of all of those systems. And as long as we baby it, it takes care of us. We try to land it very gently and softly. We use minimum braking. We try to get as long life as we can out of the tires and the brakes. We don't make sudden power adjustments to cool down or cool off those engines too rapidly. We get longer engine life that way. We run our temperatures a little cooler than even the book says we can. And we find out when we go in for a hot section, our engines are the best in the country. So we take care of the airplane, and it takes care of us. But that airplane, with all those avionics and all those systems, isn't even one tiny percent as sophisticated as your brain, as your mind. Can't even touch the body of a little baby that comes right out of a mother. Now, when a baby is born, a baby is not complete. Because a baby has a brain, but it doesn't have much you could call mind yet. It is born with a complete sensory system, but not much sensory perception. It is born with a total range of emotions, but no emotional control. It is born with feelings, but it has no capacity in the mind or the brain to relate one feeling to another or to derive any real pleasure in one sense of the word or great pain, although there can be both pain and pleasure, not to the same degree we have. For example, parents, unwisely, and I've seen people do such a stupid thing, can throw a baby back and forth. The baby has no concept, as you do, of the fear of falling or the fear of heights. That's why so many children lost their lives toddling out of a window at a height or something, because they have no fear of heights. They have not yet learned through the many, many experiences as they're little that it hurts to fall down. They haven't yet jumped from a chair to the floor or from the top step to the ground, as they do later on pretending to be a paratrooper. Or maybe tie a sheet on their back and jump off of the garage roof like a lot of kids have done because they saw Superman, thought they could do it too. 6 weeks later, when their ankle is out of the cast, they decide that that was a dumb thing to do, that they can't fly with just a sheet on their back. But when they're a little bitty baby, they don't know that. So they have no perception yet of a fear of height and a fear of falling. But there is nothing more perfect in the entirety of creation than a perfect newborn baby. I mean one with all of its senses there, that is healthy and whole. I wonder if you've ever thought of that before, that we as human beings represent the best that God could do. Now in the United States of America, we are ridden with crime, and the highest representative age category for all criminal acts is age 16. Age 15, 14, 13, those are close thirds and fourths. Age 17, I believe, is second, last time I checked. But There are tens of millions of crimes that are committed every single year. But do you know, for each one of those crimes, and those are all the major crime categories of larceny, arson, theft, and the like, I believe that for every crime that is committed, there were probably dozens of other crimes committed by parents and by other people that produced that criminal act. Because even Hitler was a baby once, and so was Mussolini. And though it may be repugnant to you to think about it in the aftermath of whatever it was, 20, 30 million people dead, 11 million, 6 million Jews, 11 million in the Soviet Union alone, I imagine, in looking back at World War II, it's difficult to think of Adolf Hitler being born to a mother in Austria who cuddled him and fondled him and loved him, changed his diapers, and nourished him. I imagine little Adolf growing up had a certain environment that contributed to a certain attitude toward other people. There were probably some family problems there. I don't know exactly what there were. It was said that he developed a mother fixation, and that Eva von Braun, who was his mistress, was very strangely almost like a foster mother to him. It was also rumored, and I think it was apparently proved, although I think it was admitted by Hitler himself to those who were close to him, that he was impotent. And it was partly to do with that mother fixation. So there were some strange psychological hang-ups, some strange mental quirks that drove this man. But he was a little baby once. And criminals are made, they are not born. Now, you were a little baby once, and so were all these teenage kids that are members of the gangs that were interviewed recently on a television special done by the network. They had actually parked a van outside a street corner in New York City, and you could see the shadowy figures through infrared camera lights, and they didn't even know the van was there, and you saw a group of these kids. A stranger came into the neighborhood, they just started shoving him, and I guess he said something, and then they shoved him again, and he said something else. And you just see these huddled forms, and you don't really see a knife, but the commentator is telling you that someone has pulled a knife, and they stabbed this man. They never saw him before, but they stabbed him. The police arrive, and they had a big fight with the police. And finally, some of them are arrested and hauled downtown, but of course, very short period of time, they're all released to their parents. But the reason they were down on the street corner is because they couldn't stand being with their parents. In the first place, a lot of them didn't have both parents. If every other baby born is illegitimate, it's quite likely that at least half of those kids don't know who their father is. So about half of the remaining half are living in either divorced or broken homes, or homes that are only a shambles of a home, and not a home anyway, but a more like a motel or a place to eat and sleep, if even that, and that's the end of it.
This topic will be continued on the next edition in series of The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong. You're invited to learn more about these important issues through the pages of Plain Truth. This international journal of understanding comes along every month with a penetrating analysis of world news in the light of Bible prophecy. Correspondents from around the world explain seemingly unrelated events and bring you the good news beyond. Plain Truth. Your subscription is free of charge. There's no cost or obligation. Plain Truth. You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.